Well, good afternoon, everyone. Let me welcome you here to the London School of Economics. I'm absolutely delighted to be able to introduce our guest this afternoon, His Excellency Petra Salimi, Acting Foreign Minister of Kosovo. I'll just call him Minister from here on out rather than Acting Minister. I think it's sort of probably a very good reflection, actually, of your role in Kosovo's foreign policy since independence. I'm sure the Minister needs absolutely no introduction to almost everyone in this room. However, I will just give a little bit of brief biographical note. Mr. Salimi is, as just noted, currently Acting Foreign Minister of Kosovo, but he'd served as Deputy Foreign Minister for two mandates and is currently an interim minister following the election of the former Foreign Minister Hashim Thaçi as President of the Republic. At the Kosovo Foreign Ministry, Salimi has led the portfolio of accession to international organisations, public diplomacy, interfaith dialogue, which I know is an area he has given particular attention to and has achieved some very, very impressive results, and countering violent extremism, as well as the country's innovative digital diplomacy strategy, which I hope we'll have a chance to talk a little bit about that as well. Previous to being engaged in politics, Salimi was engaged in Kosovo's media landscape as one of the co-founders of Gazeta Express and as national media officer at the OSCE mission in Kosovo. He has also previously served as member of the board of directors of the George Soros Foundation in Kosovo, as well as the Balkan Children and Youth Foundation, established by President Martti Ahtisaari. Salimi has also worked as a private consultant in public relations and communications for global companies in banking, telecoms, and energy services. The subject of his talk this afternoon is Kosovo and the Western Balkans in the context of European political and security challenges. Minister.
Thank you very much, James. Pleasure to be here. I've studied in LSE some years ago, just before the independence, and it's good to be back in London. I had a good meeting in FCO earlier during the day. What I will do today is maybe have some 20 minutes of the initial presentation of on the subject, as it was explained here, and then I would like to have Q&As with the public and give more time to you on whatever portfolio of issues you want to discuss, and not maybe only limited to the subject matter, including the digital diplomacy. And I will start at a peculiar point or corner not related to Kosovo, and that is Andreas Breivik in Norway some years ago. You may remember him. A Norwegian man born 1979, my age, who studied in Ninsen Academy, which was very close to where I lived in Oslo for 7 years. One day he wakes up and shoots 70 children. And on the day, he publishes a pamphlet saying, it's called European Declaration of Independence, that the gravest danger for Europe, European continent, in the decades to come will be occupation by Islam, that Muslims will take over. And in this pamphlet of several hundred pages, Kosovo was mentioned 200 times. And so Breivik mentions 200 times Kosovo because he says the basis and the bridge of Islam occupying the rest of Europe will be Kosovo, Albania, and these Muslim islands. And you will say ravings of a madman, of a far-right radical who murdered children participating in social democratic camp as an excuse that they are being too soft on Islam. But then we look today where we are in the global, and we look at newspapers, and if we ignore completely the extreme far-right, murderous far-right, and we see that even in the mainstream center-right of the European political discourse, you have EU leaders, presidents of EU countries, who say that Islam is incompatible with EU. You had a debate on TV last night between two presidential candidates, and one of them said, Islam is danger for America, is at war with America. So then you get a picture of the world in which this Huntingtonian divide and this antagonistic clashes of civilizations are translating into a real foreign policy problems for countries like Kosovo. Because in this worldview of black and white, we are the Muslims. 95% of the people in Kosovo declare themselves as such. But then you have to scratch the surface and realize that, well, actually, if you drive from Pristina Airport to my office in the center of the city, you'll have to go through Bill Clinton Avenue with a golden, gold-plated statue of Bill Clinton. The first street to the left is Bob Dole Street. The second street to the left is George W. Bush Boulevard, which ends at the center of the city with a massive Catholic cathedral being built as we speak. And if you go to YouTube and you search Catholic Cathedral, Kosovo, you'll get a Jewish American Senator, Chuck Schumer, fundraising in Boston, money for the Catholic Cathedral in Pristina. And the street then begins Mother Teresa Boulevard, the quintessential Catholic, actually saint to be as of this year. So you realize that actually Kosovo is not part of this Huntingtonian schematics, but it's far more subtle and far more nuanced, because the world is far more subtle and far more nuanced. And you realize that, I'd like to call it, you know, the Greek dish moussaka, where layers upon layers of potato and meat and onions, that Kosovo has a far more diverse moussaka of layers of identity than only this or only this. Nevertheless, Republic of Kosovo and our foreign policy will have to deal with parliaments of 28 EU members in every step of next ratification of EU integration process. And these parliaments are changing. And that far right, which was saying unspeakable things only some years ago, those things are becoming rather acceptable nowadays. Part of the tabloid discourse. Part of what politicians are saying. So we have to be more Catholic than the Pope. We have to ensure that we prove to every single parliament, national parliament, European parliament, and the public opinion out there, that there is no danger for Kosovo, from Kosovo. The fact that there are some Kosovars in Syria fighting for ISIS cannot annul the fact that 95% of Kosovars support UK and US foreign policy, according to an opinion poll by British Council. There's a far greater rate that you can find anywhere in UK of your own foreign policy support. Kosovo is the most pro-Western country you will find in Western Balkans. You'll find more women with burqas in London, Swiss Cottage, than in seats of Pristina. We are the first country which have elected a woman president in the entire Eastern Europe, including EU members from Slovenia to Greece. We are the only country in Western Balkans and Eastern Europe which have put LGBT category in the constitution enshrined. So in Kosovo, race, ethnicity, gender, and sexual orientation are equal identity categories. And conceivably, it has not been tried yet, you can go and get married in the municipality of Pristina if you're gay. So, 95% Muslim, clash of civilizations, you realize that this is not quite the story that you see in the media by the far right, or sometimes, oddly enough, by the far left. Because there's a very thin line between Noam Chomsky and some of the far right when they describe America and their involvement in the world. So, we at the Foreign Ministry and Kosovo, we really have to do a lot of homework to prove to all our friends and all the naysayers out there that we are not an exporter of problems, of challenges. We are not a contributor to a global set of increasingly intertwined problems, from violent extremism to immigration to other issues. But actually, we can be part of the solution. We have started a very innovative interfaith dialogue program, and I'm very happy that Prince Charles is coming next week to visit our program. We've had Prince Ghazi of Jordan, brother of King Abdullah, Tony Blair. I have Father Donald Reeves here, who is one of the contributors to this program. Over 800 people from around the world have come to participate in our flagship events, conferences, which aim at promoting Kosovo as a hub for interfaith dialogue, And those have been recognized also in Ban Ki-moon's two consecutive reports on Kosovo in Security Council, as well as the annual State Department report on religious freedoms, which is published on an every year basis. And this is one part of our public diplomacy in which we're trying to complement whatever foreign interaction we have with other acts and other projects in order to show and throw light against this prejudicial side of public discourse in Europe and elsewhere in the world. Rick Santorum was a candidate too. He published a letter a few years ago and said, the gravest danger, and he was a candidate until a few weeks ago, and lost round, he almost made, he won like 8 states in the primaries. And he said the gravest danger for U.S. foreign policy is the next jihad in Kosovo. Jihad? Kosovo? If you come to Kosovo, you realize that we're very good at macchiatos, we're very good at mojitos, but like you don't really have any fertile soil for a type of prejudices that you read or reread about in our own newspapers. Or what Serbia says that Kosovo is. Because mind you, when we applied for membership to UNESCO, the Serbian ambassador to UNESCO, Tanasković, in Radio Russia, Sputnik, said that we, the Christians of the world, have to get united against this Islamic product of Kosovo and not allow it to become members of UNESCO. And Serbian President Nikolic also said that Kosovo is like ISIS. If we let ISIS join UNESCO, then we have let Kosovo join UNESCO. So there's a deliberate usage of or fear-mongering to paint Kosovo in a way that is simply not true. It doesn't reflect the reality. It doesn't reflect the situation on the ground. And the situation on the ground is that, again, some statistics, we are the safest corner in Europe in terms of per capita crime rates per annum, according to Interpol. You are safer at any point of Kosovo, in any place of Kosovo, than any point of London, in any time of London. Murder rates, violent crime rates, are lowest in Kosovo in the entire Western Balkans. You will be probably more statistically chances to be mugged the moment you get out of this building than in any part of Kosovo. Even inter-ethnic crime. I was just reading the police reports. In north of Kosovo, the spark, the place where there was always clashes between the ethnic Serbs and the Kosovo institutions or Kosovo Albanians, there were only 5 inter-ethnic incidents throughout the entire 2015. And I tell you, 5 inter-ethnic incidents? I've been reading some reports from Belfast lately, and certainly there are more inter-ethnic or inter-communal incidents in Northern Ireland, which is part of the EU. Both communities speak the same language, same faith, believe in the same messenger of God. So I think Kosovo actually has been doing rather well. It is the most successful case of liberal military intervention in the modern European history. But we have to be far better at ensuring that our foreign policy, our internal reforms, our multiple transitional processes, and it's not going to transition from war to peace, because 15 years ago, a genocide was unfolding in Kosovo, only 15 years ago. But also transition from being a conservative society where men are men doing politics and women are in kitchen to being a more open-minded, in which 33% of our women in the parliament, of parliament MPs are women. 40% of our ambassadors are women. Washington, Brussels, Rome, some of the biggest capitals we have actually, and it's not quota system in diplomacy, it's because they deserve. And third layer of transition, economic transition, from being a socialist planned economy to being a wild capitalist one to a more regulated free market economy based on the EU pact, the stability association agreement that we just signed with the EU. So that is one set of problems, one group of problems which reflect in Kosovo and they are taking a lot of space. And this is a question of violent extremism. And how we tackle and how we can move forward to ensure Kosovo's rightful position as a solution provider rather than a problem maker. Second one was obviously immigration. You can see where I was in Paris yesterday, and it's a big thing. Germany, wherever you go, Our numbers of immigrants last year were also very high. We had 66,000 Kosovars who left Kosovo seeking asylum in Germany mostly last year. And part of the reason was that also there was a flow of rumors that Germans are giving resident permits, so people are just jumping, competing who will go first to Germany. And then we had to tackle that. We had to kick and hit the networks of people smugglers. We had to provide proper information campaign to tell people that you are from Kosovo and you're not entitled to asylum in EU because nobody's chasing you for life or death. Syrians are being chased for life and death and they have a claim for asylum, but you don't. So you cannot go to EU and ask for asylum because you don't have a job, because that's not a valid reason for asylum in today's world. Luckily, our numbers have dropped considerably, 96%. From 13,000 asylum seekers in Hungary in February last year, the number has been zero in January this year. From 14,000 asylum seekers in Germany at the peak in March last year, and the numbers were below 300 last year in December. So we managed to really ensure that we understand and contribute to the overall solutions to lower down the pressure of asylum seekers in the rest of Europe, because that is creating problems for Europe, but also for our own integration process. We are still fighting for visa liberalization to ensure that Kosovo can travel visa-free, and skeptical public in Europe are making pressure on skeptical politicians in Europe to delay these type of integrative processes for Western Balkan countries. And we are now the only corner in the Western Balkans that cannot travel visa-free to the rest of Schengen zone. We had a long list of conditions, 95 of them, to fulfill. I think Minister Chalako has been your guest some months ago and explained the process in more detail, so I won't dwell upon it too much. But in a way, while the rest of the Balkans had the goalposts here to get visa liberalization, our goalposts were there, and they're kind of still moving, which is a bit unfair with the moving goalposts. But we are where we are, and the world is where it is, so we have to ensure that we fulfill all the criteria, and we are even better at our homework to ensure that we provide the same opportunities to our own citizens. Third set of problems is this rising nationalism. It's all interconnected, huh? Question of religious extremism, immigration, and the fact that it was easy, in a way, easy, our first battle of becoming free, because it was based on meta-narration of freedom. You know, Michael Collins, Braveheart, it's easy to do epic stories and to warm people to the idea of freedom, of not being occupied, of not having somebody shoot you down because you're of different ethnicity, of not having your mom or dad fired from their jobs just because they're Albanians, of not having Milosevic, the butcher of Balkans, starting campaigns of mass massacres around Kosovo. So it was easy. It was difficult, people died, women were raped, country was destroyed, but unification of people around one idea, one concept was easy. Second one was independence, and that was also not difficult meta-narration. To be free, to be independent, to have a country. I mean, I think only Scots were the ones that voted against their own independence, but we, by far, had a century-old drive since the fall of Ottoman Empire, when we were violently incorporated into the Serbian state, to just have our own state. 60s riots, 80s riots, the constitution of 1974 of former Yugoslavia, which gave Kosovo substantive autonomy to create institutions, to be part of federation, have equal voice at federation, equal participation. Then Milosevic destroyed all of it, canceled the autonomy, canceled the Kosovo's constitutional position in former Yugoslavia. That triggered all sorts of other problems with Croatia and Slovenia, and actually probably triggered the wars in former Yugoslavia. But then we had 10 years of Milosevic, the war, the Rambouillet Accords, Ahtisaari, negotiations, and Kosovo became free. And it was easy to sell independence. On our Independence Day, minus 17 degrees, hundreds of thousands of people were partying. Free alcohol in all bars. Massive, massive national party of monumental proportions. Not a single incident of violence. No stabbing, no killing, no... It's really like genuine. You can see how people are enthusiastic from becoming a state, youngest state in planet. But it's not easy anymore, because what is the next meta-narration? How do you get people together? How do you get Serbs who hate the fact that Kosovo is independent, but they are citizens of Kosovo, and hating the concept actually is freedom of speech? They don't like the fact that they're independent, but they are citizens of Kosovo. And our state is fundamentally based on a civic concept, not an ethnic concept. That was a quid pro quo with Ahtisaari. Okay, you are independent, but you'll have to give a substantive autonomy, as well as affirmative rights, positive discrimination to the Serbian community. And we did that. That was a deal that we did with the international community. But we are struggling how to create now this next meta-narration, how to warm people to the idea of independent European Kosovo. And Europe doesn't sell very well nowadays. Let's be frank. Especially when it's so far. How can you tell an 18-year-old, be happy, we just signed the feasibility study for stabilization association agreement. Blah, 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 blah. And it just doesn't have the same epic importance like freedom or independence. And this is where we in politics have to be far, far better at ensuring, working, implementing reforms in the way that they're understood and communicated to our voters and the people of Kosovo. That the next third stage of our development is the most complex one. There's no one enemy or one set of lobbying, but we have to ensure that we deliver on economic reforms, create freedom, individual freedoms, and protect them, ensure that we are fulfilling EU criteria, which are back-breaking, very difficult. Sometimes they go to the core of cultural interpretations, and you know, from things like LGBT rights to things like ensuring that you don't pay a little bit bakshish to your doctor at the hospital, or that a big politician doesn't take big bakshish without being asked for at his own job. And this is the next challenge. This is a challenge for us in Kosovo, it's a challenge for the rest of the Western Balkans. But they're intertwined. You cannot have one battle without having a holistic approach in the all. You cannot say, oh, okay, you know what? We will not deal with radical Islam and violent extremism because we have to deal with corruption, because this is the way to go forward. Because no, because Salafi groups are actually financing NGOs in Kosovo to create these problems. So you have to deal with this and this and this and this while keeping coherent narration and story to have people behind you so you don't have all of a sudden dispersed population with no clear aim, but actually more and more drawn to the margins and marginal political isms like nationalism, fundamentalism, nationalism and socialism, the most dangerous combination. And in this process, in a way, we're not being held by all these big problems. Syria, Libya. We need 5 EU countries still to recognize Kosovo. But how can Spain recognize Kosovo but they're so obsessed with their own Catalan story? You're an expert in Cyprus, and we really hope that Cyprus, Greeks, and Turks will find a solution this year or next year, so it doesn't have a spillover effect on our own consideration of becoming a state. And in a way, we just had some meetings today with some diplomats, and they were saying, well, actually, now there is some traction to Kosovo, and there are some diplomats talking of how we can help. Because there's been some violence in our parliament. You may have seen tear gas thrown by opposition. Not a pretty sight, but ironically, if you are a quiet person doing your homework and doing no troubles, people tend to forget you, even if you're struggling in the class, so you may somehow be ignored. And then if you throw a fit of rage and create problems, then they all of a sudden you get some help and some support. And I'm not saying that you should do that, but irony is that only the front pages of newspapers help you to get traction with the chancelleries in the world. So we are where we are, Kosovo, which I think, and statistics say, is a successful product. It's a state only 8 years old, yet the highest average GDP growth in Balkans in those 8 years, on average, was 4%. At the time, mind you, of the worst financial crisis that hit the planet. We were born only a few months before Lehman Brothers folded. So basically, as we were born in the state, all of the Balkans were going bankrupt. The debts of the countries around us are humongous. Our debt per GDP ratio is only 10%. We have very conservative fiscal policies. The Minister of Finance does not allow for the country to take debt unless it's approved by two-thirds of the parliament, which makes it almost impossible for us to take debt. We have inherited some Yugoslav debt that we have to service. Our Achilles heel is youth unemployment, because the growth has been there, but it has not been matched by the growth of employment, especially among young people, because we are the youngest generation, youngest country in Europe, not only by the date of birth of the nation, but by demographics. I think over 50% of people are under the age of 30 or so. So this is a particular problem that we have to work on, creating jobs. Is that unemployment as high as some statistics show? Because you can get up to 45% if you go to Google. We gather it's about between 27 to 30, but a lot of people don't pay taxes, don't declare the jobs, so it's difficult to calculate. But still, it's a problem. And we are in a very competitive region in which to get foreign investors, it's not that easy. And definitely we need FDI to substitute for the very Keynesian model of growth that we had the last 7 years, in which, because we are a young state, we were able to have a double-digit growth on our remittance, on our taxes. Tax base was growing. Our budget was growing from 800 million to 1.6 million, billion in basically 6 years. So because we had increased income, we were able to spend up to 40% of the entire budget in public construction works and increase of the salaries, and that inflamed or helped consumption, helped construction, and that enabled growth of economy despite lack of FDI, supported and buttressed by the remittances, because every third Kosovar lives in EU. In France, you'll have the World Cup this year, I mean European Cup, and it happened that Switzerland is in the same group with Albania. But when Switzerland plays Albania in France, 14 will be from Kosovo. So it's actually Kosovars playing Kosovars, because we have so many Kosovars in Switzerland and in Albania playing for the national teams. And we have it in Germany and in Finland. And luckily and hopefully, in May this year, UEFA will admit Kosovo as the newest member of a football community. So we'll be able to play football as well. I think, you know, when we go on recognitions, and of course you have to be recognized bilaterally. 111 states do that now. Very important. But let's be frank. I think to be in Champions League and Eurovision Song Contest is as important, if not more important, for the national pride. All of you guys sit in London, watch crap songs on a crap festival, but all of you watch it. And many of you vote. We can't. We don't have our own song in Eurovision Song Contest. And it's penultimate show of European unity and disunity at the same time. And regional factions, but also watching it together. So we have to ensure that you're part of Eurovision Song Contest now that we are hopefully becoming able to participate in UEFA Champions League. So in short, this was just a few tastes of New Kosovo. As I said, macchiato is our national drink. I just read the custom statistics that we are apparently consuming 4 kilos of coffee per annum per capita, which is between Norway and America, apparently, which goes to show that the coffee culture, the scene, summer, whoever comes to Kosovo will realize that actually it is a very dynamic, very vibrant city, a nation, because of youth, because of very contemporary, solid contemporary art scene, very solid music scene. I think this is where the niche of our presentation to the world should be. When Singapore became independent, people were saying, Singapore, independent, but it's just a port with a lot of prostitution. It doesn't have agriculture, it doesn't have mining, it doesn't have resources, it doesn't have oil, it doesn't have gas, it doesn't have anything. How can this city be independent? Lo and behold, Singapore today has like a trillion euros in financial transactions because it found a niche. It was called maritime financing. Now they diversify to biotech, IT. It's still a city, but they found a niche. Ireland was very poor until very recently. Yet they also found a niche. Good English language skills, education, combined with low taxes, and all of a sudden Google and Facebook is now based in Dublin, and they cover the rest of the world from Dublin. And other cases of successful regions, micro-regions, which found their niche. And this is the search for this third narration, meta-narration of Kosovo, how to find our niche to make it, to be ourselves competitive and be part of the world in a way that makes our population very proud and active participants and citizens in our state. So on this note, please.
Thank you very, very much indeed for an extensive overview of where Kosovo stands, the problems it faces, but also, I think, as you said, it's sort of trying to find what next. This is the question that that everyone seems to be asking. We have about 20 minutes for questions, so if I'll be keeping an eye out. So if you just sort of make yourself known to me, I would ask that... Given time constraints, please try and keep it to questions rather than statements, and just one question as well. And if you could please identify yourself. So, get in first.
Yeah, it's interesting to the national at CCUCL. So, thank you very much for your overview that paints a rather rosy picture that we don't see today, be it because of the tear gas or because of the bigger crisis elsewhere. I just have a question about Kosovo's membership in international organizations. So, having in mind all the security issues that Europe and the region is facing, how compelling has become Kosovo's membership in Interpol and Europol, and what's the situation?
Very good question. Today I got a notification from International Bureau of Expositions, which organizes Expo Milano. It's going to be the next one, I think, in Qatar or Astana, I'm not sure. And we just became today members of IBO in Paris. It's an international organization which enables you to be part of the expositions and exchanges in the world fairs. It's a small thing, but it's big because we can then also horse trade with our vote. There are a lot of countries who want to have Expo, and they need votes from other countries. Interpol is in June, the executive board. Ministry of Interior is leading that file, but we are helping the process. There are two stages, the board and then the general conference in Bali in November. It may be that consensus is needed, which is why we are keeping the process as apolitical as possible, argumenting that we need to fight crime, transnational organized crime, drugs, terrorism, violent extremism, and for this purpose, we hope that in June there will be a decision of the board. The problem is that Palestine has also applied, and Solomon Islands, and some of our friends have different views regarding different cases. We have nothing to do with Palestine. It's a different case, different history, different legal aspect, different... But it's clear that in some processes, their drive for recognition hampers some more unified approach from Friends of Kosovo. Hopefully in June there will be a decision which will allow then us to go for the vote, a two-third vote needed in November. But it's not a UN agency. so you don't quite have the same limitations like you have with UN agencies by US Congress, which, as you know, has a bill approved many years ago that wherever PLO applies, they have to cut the funding, which is why they cut the funding at UNESCO, where America doesn't have a vote, which had then also implications to our own bid last year.
I'm just going to jump in very quickly. Where do we stand currently with the recognition process? Last year was the lowest year since the Declaration of Independence for numbers of new recognition. I believe there was just one country.
Three states.
Which ones? One, I had Antigua and Barbuda as a UN member.
UN member, yes.
And right, then, yes. Okay. And then right.
Cook
and Niue.
Yeah.
Yes. But in terms of UN members, it was just the one. Where do you see things going? Because this is obviously a question that is being brought up by the opposition. Has it sort of now basically stopped, or do you feel that there's some sort of something in particular that needs to be broken, which would then lead to
listen?
A further
our Ministry of Foreign Affairs have total 200 staff, and a budget of 18 million. UNMIC in Kosovo, which does nothing but reporting, has three times bigger budget and twice more staff. Your embassy in Kosovo has as much staff as we have. As a ministry, with all the embassies and everything. So, we have a limited bandwidth which we have to place on some issues. Now, we thought already 2 years ago that we will continue with recognitions. They will come one by one. But recognitions per se do not help you in obtaining exchange programs in education, more funds from the UN agencies, ability to act into multilateral world, be part of intricate legal web of legal instruments, conventions. So we will, and we have worked a lot on ability for us to have access to international organizations. We expect, I guess it is news, but we expect some good news in the Warsaw Summit of NATO. And we've been working a lot behind the scenes to ensure it's not possible PFP for Kosovo, but instruments of security which are able to offer Kosovo exchanges, public diplomacy programs, trainings, political dialogue, and connection to Brussels, which is not only unilateral based on KFOR presence in Kosovo, but bilateral, meaning also Kosovo's input to Brussels at HQ NATO. And that has been one thing we have been working. UNESCO took a lot of time for us last year. It was a big battle, a battle we lost, alas. We got almost two-thirds, but by three votes we were shy. Serbia was helped by Bashar al-Assad, who voted them, yes. North Korea voted Serbia. The democracy index of those voting Kosovo was about 26% higher than of the countries that endorsed Kosovo and those that opposed Kosovo. Yet, we lost. And now we're preparing for the next battle next year. And the Council of Europe, very much. We've been working a lot with that. We could not apply because some people are saying, why didn't you apply? Why didn't you apply? Why didn't you apply? Because we were told by our European partners, finish SAA. We don't want to anger some of the non-recognizing countries. So just finish the SAA, let it be in force. Once it is in force, then apply for the membership of the Council of Europe. But don't do it parallelly because one might damage the other. Hence, we had to sort of be patiently working behind the scenes without actually filing the application to Strasbourg, which we will do shortly, because I think Kosovo is the only corner in the world, in Europe, from Vladivostok to Valencia, which is not covered by European Convention of Human Rights, hence ability of citizens to sue us, their own state and the government, in European Court of Human Rights. And this will now, I think, unfold in the following weeks and months.
Okay.
So, we didn't forget the recognitions. We are working. At least three of them have been there for the last 6 months, and we hope that Peruina is working that file, and many other people across capitals are working, and we hope some good news very soon. But it's one thing is clear, the easy countries are finished. I mean, it's not the big wave of eight recognitions. Now the countries remaining are the countries that have some sort of internal, external considerations. So you will not have any more 10, 15 countries recognizing you in a go. You'll have one here, one there, one here, one there. But it's important that we parallelly, we keep the multilateral diplomacy, security, things that matter for the world. We cannot focus only on bilateral recognitions and forget that actually people care about violent extremism, so we have to have some people there working on that file, anti-ISIS coalition. And you have to be realistic. There are limited resources of people and funds to do these things, frankly.
suddenly got a lot. I saw Bernard at the back.
Thanks. You say that foreign direct investment is highly important. Now, when you started listing off the qualities which Costa Rica got, and you listed a whole lot of very positive qualities. Why is it, however, that we don't get the FDI? What is it? What are the challenges which the foreign direct investors face? Because they must be seeing something which is very different from what you are seeing. It's not just that they are reading whatever you would call as the equivalent of the Daily Mail newspaper here. Something is putting them off. There are other indicators that there seem to be other problems. But if that is the solution, how actually are we going to get what you need?
I think lack of FDI, though it has doubled 2016 compared 2015 compared to 14, from 160 million in 14 to over 300 million last year, according to the Central Bank of Kosovo. And two major contracts have been signed, one with Contour Global in East Coast, a New York company, for the construction of the power plant. That's 1.2 billion euros contract. And Brezovica Ski Resort with Compagnie des Alpes, a French-led consortium, which is planning a 400 million euro investment in 7,000 beds in a ski resort, which is a very nice greenfield investment in a minority area. Those two contracts of 1.6 billion for a country size of ours may increase further by 1.5 to 2% of GDP growth to actually reach 6 up to 7 solely based on these two contracts. And the spillover effect of faith of big investors to come to Kosovo will be massive. But it's clear that for many investors of small to medium size, not the big energy and big telecom, corruption is one thing. B, let's call it legal ambiguity. Energy sector. Until we had dialogue with Serbia to ensure that the North and the South will have same energy operator or telecom operator. And I used to work as a consultant telecom. And if Serbia is illegally having 20 GSM pillars, which is, they say they are theirs, but it's in the territory of Kosovo, and there's a private GSM operator who wants to come to the market, they'll say, like, hold on, what am I buying here? I'm buying Kosovo, but what about this 20% of territory in which Serbia is providing services? Are they my competitor? Are they legal? Are they not legal? Are they regulated? Are they not regulated? Can they dump prices to kill my market case? So there was a actual issue that dialogue with Serbia did help ensuring unified legal system, disappearance of legal ambiguity. And I know that it's not popular in Kosovo to be for dialogue with Serbia, but dialogue with Serbia did produce results of slowly but surely the parallel structures disappearing. People still say, oh, but people in the North don't recognize the Republic of Kosovo, but that's a subjective mental thing. It's important what kind of court you have, who can sue whom, where, in which court, what is the lawyer, what is the prosecutor, and what is the judge. So that is being tackled. And corruption, we have to work. It's a long-term process. There has to be cases. It's a part of visa liberalization conditionality. There are a number of high-level cases which have been prosecuted. Not so many sentences. And our track record has to be better. We have, I think, one of the best police services in Eastern Europe. But I don't think the actual court system is one of the best in Eastern Europe. So that, but the gravitational pull of Brussels, I think, is helping to slowly but surely achieve better results there. But we are not happy, we should not be happy. People, of course, are not happy, investors are not happy, and that is one thing that we have to clearly work and do a better job at.
Okay, I had gentleman at the back. Yeah.
Max Prasson, the International Development Consultant. You quoted some interesting statistics about the recent quick drop in the number of asylum applications made by Kosovo citizens in Western Europe. I wondered if you could possibly comment on the reasons behind that, and more specifically about any policies or actions undertaken by your government.
What happened last year, the beginning of last year, was unexpected by the government. We were all shocked. All of a sudden, in the month of November, December, January, in those winter months, there was an unprecedented spike of people just entering the bus and leaving Kosovo. It coincided with three factors. A, we had an election campaign in 2014 in which all parties were darn good at promising a lot of economic reforms. Elections were all about the economy because polls said people care about jobs. So every single party really focused on that. Positive campaign, a lot of social media, a lot of uplifting mood, let's call it, which was followed by 6 months or 5 months of grueling negotiations, followed by accusations of political backstabbing and betrayal, and in a way people just got disappointed with the political cast by all of us in the establishment. B, unprecedented flow of rumors that Germans are just giving resident permits. Really, like we're sitting in dinner tables with rational people who know asylum policies, they were saying, look at Germans, they're opening the doors, they're giving resident permits. Like, no, Germans are not giving resident permits. They are. Look at the... And then, like, even, like, people which are, like should know better, were saying, oh, but they have low birth rate, Germans, so they need more employees, and this is why they are... But this is, you know, a backdoor policy because they don't want Africans. They want... And nor Asians, they want Eastern Europeans. Like, bizarre stuff that you don't really... It's just not true. But I tell you, in many dinner tables and breakfast tables, people were talking, were saying this. Followed by unprecedented drop of the cost to go to Frankfurt. Before, if you were a guy in Eastern Europe or Asia or and you wanted to go, let's say, from Kosovo to Germany, it costed you about 3,000 or 4,000 euros. Fake passport, one border, second border, you know, criminal networks where... Now, the price dropped down to 300 euros. Bus ticket from Pristina to North Serbia. North Serbia was a hub of the criminal networks of people smugglers because they used the border with Hungary to smuggle people. And then you have YouTube clips in which, like, Serbian cops were just, like, entering their cars, a bunch of people in the car, 50 euro each, crossing the border, dumping them to Hungary. And then all of a sudden it was cheaper to illegally go to EU than to go legally. To go legally, you need a Schengen visa, you need an airfare, you need the, and it was cheaper for young people, 18-year-old guy who misses his cousin in Frankfurt, and then he was just leaving. So then we had this spike that was really based on these factors. First factor was not solved, because people are still disappointed with mainstream politics, but at least the government was created, and there was a flow, the budget was approved, and from having no government for 4 or 5 months, at least, you know, things start working. Businesses have more confidence. In 14, the overall drop in construction investments dropped dramatically. Already in 15, it spiked again. And real estate is a big source of investments in Kosovo. So that helped. B, we had to basically bombard media, radio, TV, internet. We had to tell Germans, do it. They had to improve their law and put Kosovo from list of unsecure zones to list of secure countries. And that in itself shortened the visa process from being 6 months consideration to being 6 days or a few weeks. And that move in itself then meant that people could not go asylum shopping because people are not going to Norway. Norway is a very nice country to live. I lived there. But Norway has only 1 week assessment for a visa. People are going to Germany because in Germany it was 6 months. So people are doing rational choice of where are seeking asylum in. And once legally Germany fixed that problem, it was also easier to just stop the flow of people expecting that they're going to get a resident permit there. And the third rule of law, fighting organized crime, like over 50, 60 people were arrested in 4 or 5 big cases of people smugglers. Some of them just got 16 years together, 4 or 5 of them in a court case for smuggling, human trafficking, I guess. And that is a big component of also stopping the... But long-term, we cannot contain a nation inside four walls. People of Kosovo need visa liberalization, because young people of Kosovo cannot be European without the ability to see Europe. A good 5% of my time as a deputy minister I swear to God, in the last 6 years I've gone helping people get visas. If there's a mother calling you and says, my son is sick of cancer, he's only 8 years old, and he would like to go to Austria to a hospital to get a check, and it gets 2 times refused by embassy, how can you not help? Or a concert by Kosovo Philharmonics, all 60 of them, or whatever the size is, and they don't get visas, and they have performance. So, so these are stuff that matter. An inability of especially young people to travel really increases the frustration and the sense of self-victimization, which is basis for both nationalism and radical fundamentalism. Others are against us. They hate us. Look at them. We are alone. We are isolated, and they're not allowing us to travel. And this then causes a far more difficult time for me in TV debate to fight for Europe when I have no argument saying, but you can travel to Europe. Oh, you can, you're a politician, but my daughter can't. So this is one thing that we have to work a lot with our European partners to make them understand. It's very kind of frustrating because Juncker went on TV the other day and said, oh, we had to fast-track Ukraine for visa liberalization. Ukraine? Oh, and then you have a summit in which they say we have to fast-track Turkey for visa liberalization. They already fast-tracked Moldova because there was a fight between pro-Russian and pro-Western in Moldova, and they liberalized visas for Colombia. I love all these countries. I'm a minister, and I really appreciate that each one of those countries should be able to travel visa-free to Europe. But Colombia, Ukraine, we have fulfilled a lot of conditions, a lot of technical conditions, and we are very small, 1.8 million people, the size of a neighborhood in London. So we feel a little bit neglected and downtrodden in our attempts to ensure freedom of movement for our people.
We're almost out of time, so I see two questions. If there's anyone else who's really got a pressing, if you've got a question as well. All right, I'll take three. Please keep them really quick.
And I'll be also short.
Okay. Gentlemen,
this is the most
very
difficult
short,
part.
Very short. How do you plan to deal with the backlash of having to send KLA members to the International Court, given that they're your national heroes?
Let's do three of them. So,
yeah.
So given the Constitutional Court's rule on the association of Serbian majority communities, what changes do you envision in the agreement?
Mm-hmm. And gentlemen there.
In your opinion, how far back in history does the idea of the Kosovo nation go?
Three good questions.
A special court, let's be frank, we hated it. There was ICTY, who did war crimes research, ULEX court, UNMIC court, a local special prosecutor, is a fifth layer of justice doing the same story of 99. There was not a problem with it. Serbs are using it, and are using it, to relativize the whole Balkan story. Oh, they all did crimes. We did crimes, Bosnians did crimes. Look at Kosovars, they did organ harvesting. We were all terrible. I don't know what happened in the 90s. Well, no, my friend. In a normal society, in a normal dinner discussion, you cannot equalize Dresden bombing by allies with a Holocaust. Holocaust is incomparable to anything in Second World War. And in the Balkan Wars, we cannot compare what Milosevic did in Srebrenica and in Kosovo and in Ukraine with individual, probably, war crimes committed by Kosovars in territory of Kosovo. Did Kosovars go to Belgrade or Niš or Vranje throw bombs against Serbian civilians and employed terrorist tactics? No. They were in their own backyard villages defending their own country from being completely driven out in a genocidal fit by a maniac who was killing people and then redugging the graves, taking the body and regraving them in Belgrade in the bizarre story of war crimes in former Yugoslavia. But this Swiss politician called Dick Marty, who was on the record against Kosovo independence for many years before we became independent, volunteered to write a report on the Kosovo crimes. The report was written. It's titled Organ Harvesting in Tututututu. Horrible title, but good for media because it's... So, it was approved. Now, we have to clear our name. Those who have done crimes, they have to go. This is why Kosovo changed our own constitution to do a Lockerbie type of model in which our own court, called Specialized Chamber, will operate in a foreign soil, in the Netherlands, according to our law, our constitution, to try people who are accused for war crimes by a special prosecutor, which will be American, and which is an American. And you know what? We have to do it. Maybe 1945, if Allied did war crimes, victor's justice. But now it's a different time. And now we have to show that we are a serious European nation, and actually a tough discussion in the Parliament, tough sell for our own public. Why are we doing this? Why are Serbs not doing this? But we had to do it, and we, you know what? There's never been a case of any Kosovo leader, even sitting prime minister, who has been accused by international justice and they failed to show up within 24 hours in the court of law, international court of law. A lot of Serbs escaped and were running around hiding. Some Croats also escaped and were hiding. Kosovars went next day in the court. Not a single of them lost the court cases, by the way. There are a number of prosecutors in ICPY who would say that there was nothing on the Kosovo side comparably even close to what happened in Milosevic's machinery of the state, in which the entire state was employed to annihilate people. I said short, so it was long. Second, constitutional court ruling. Since Kai Eide report on 2005, which started the process of, after the 2004 riots, the process of negotiations, and then Ahtisaari process, there was a clear two lines that we promised to Serbs. Horizontal connection between municipalities and vertical connection to Serbia. This is how we became independent, my friend. We said, okay, this is what we do. You recognize us, we become a state. I think it was a great deal. The best deal possible. We became a state. That is enshrined in the constitution. Association of municipalities. Municipalities can create an association. But then we have a dilemma. What about Republika Srpska in Bosnia vetoing the entire nation into oblivion? We cannot allow that. Constitutional Court said the deal signed by Serbia and Kosovo to enable creation of association of Serbian municipalities, association shall be formed, and it's in line with the constitution. Well, these are the red lines. You cannot cross these red lines. So now we have red lines in the decision that we still have to create association, but we have to draft all the legal documents. Because mind you, court also said one thing. This is not a decision. This is principles. So we cannot make a decision on principles because principles is not a legal document. It's just political principles. Hence, we will make a decision when the legal documents are approved, which is statute and the law, I guess. Is it the law?
Decree.
Yeah, decree. The decree, administrative decree. Of. So once those two, then we'll go to court again, and they'll make assessment whether this is in line with the Constitution, so we don't get executive third layer, because Ahtisaari was very smart. Instead of allowing for a supra-municipal autonomy with extensive right, he strengthened municipalities. Municipalities in Kosovo are very strong, very powerful. They have primary, secondary education, primary, secondary healthcare. In Mitrovica, also tertiary healthcare and tertiary education. They can collect taxes. They can really, they have extensive rights, more so than anywhere else in the Balkans, because this was also a trick to give minority municipalities a lot of power, but not allow them to have extensive regional autonomy, which can then become a divisive element, fifth column in an independent nation. And I think we should move ahead, be very strong, do the statute, provide best possible deal for Serbs, best possible. There's no reason why we should not do it. And be earnest about it, that this is, we are doing it, even though you may not like this Kosovo independence, even though you may not believe in the state, we will not do what Milosevic did. We will do exactly opposite of what Milosevic did. Hence, here's the deal. The best possible, whatever you desire. As long as it doesn't destroy the components of constitutionality and ability for Kosovo to make decisions on the central level. Third one was on an idea of nationhood. of Kosovo? Well, there was a Vilayet of Kosovo in Ottoman Empire, and there was a regional administrative unit in Ottoman Empire. So Kosovo is not like Srpska in Bosnia, in which all of a sudden somebody cleaned ethnically the other part of the nation and just created something that never existed before. Kosovo does have a continuity of regional administrative boundaries which shifted up and down, but more or less same territory. And it's clear that initial drive for freedom was associated with ability for what we say an unjust solution to the fall of Ottoman Empire, where half of Albanians remained in what is now Albania and the other half remained outside Albania in what was Kosovo, Macedonia, Montenegro and some parts of Greece, should be ratified. And nationalism, was very Westphalian, 19th century, focused on ethnic unification of and correction of the old injustice. But my friend, Kosovo is a new product. And it's not based on the Westphalian model of... Then all of a sudden, 1991, Rugova says, seeing that stories of great Albania somehow mentally coincide with what was Serbia doing, great Serbia using genocide, may not be a popular way to press for freedom. So the idea that Kosovo should be a republic was born. Now, this idea was not born completely out of thin air, because already in former Yugoslavia, Kosovo got a substantive autonomy in 1974. Constitution was changed with amendments in 1968. I know it very well because my grandfather was one of the authors of changes of 1968 Constitution. And all of a sudden, university was opened, and Kosovo became Kosovo. It was Kosovo police, Kosovo presidency, Kosovo government, and it was sufficiently different from Albania to have an identity. And I know a lot of Albanians will be very, you know, they'll say, oh, we're not Kosovars, we're Albanians from Kosovo. But, you know, it's like tomato, tomato. We are Kosovars because we are citizens of Kosovo. And it's not no shame to be Kosovar, because some people carry the flag of Chelsea FC, some other people carry flag of Kosovo, third ones of Albania. Like, you can carry all three of them. So I think identities are multiple. So this nationalism based on the ethnicity, I don't believe that we can push for it. It's a little bit crazy now in 2016. It's not crazy, but it's very passé. And it doesn't include all the little communities in Kosovo like Serbs and Turks and all the 56 Jews in Prizren and all the little communities which should be part of Kosovo as well. So I think it coincided well. The 90s story of Republic of Kosovo with then Ahtisaarian negotiations to create independent Kosovo. So there's a stretch of at least 3 decades in which idea of nationhood of Kosovo exists. And now it's a state, republic, a sovereign republic. Friends, Romans, countrymen?
That note... Thank you very, very much indeed for such a good overview of, as I say, the situation in Kosovo, for answering questions very, very fully and frankly. I think we all appreciate the fact that you took time out from your busy schedule to come and speak to us here on a Friday afternoon. And I can say for our part, we're absolutely delighted to see so many of you made the effort to come along this afternoon. So thank you all very much, and thank you very much, Minister.
My thanks go to this crowd.